My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone was like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you are back with the Mark Moss Show, where each and every week I'm going to talk to you about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, the decentralized revolution, and what I am saying is the biggest asymmetric opportunity that you'll ever see in your lifetime, in multiple lifetimes. And of course, we take advantage of those asymmetric opportunities by having asymmetric information, which is information most people don't have. So welcome back. Thanks for sticking with me. I brought a couple of my good friends into the studio with me today because, you know, probably don't want to hear me talking for all this time. And so let's get some perspective. There's a couple good stories I want to talk about.
You're lonely, man.
I got Alex in with me in the studio. I got Jessica in the studio with me. What's up, guys?
Yo.
Hey.
What's up, man?
So, I was talking earlier just about some of this big news that's been going on in the Bitcoin space. And one of the biggest pieces of news I saw this week was China. Always dominating the news headlines, and seems like they
they've
banned Bitcoin. I think it's now the eighth or ninth time, I think at least. And this year over the years, you know. And it's like,
I mean, that's what it feels like. It's like, this just reminds me of that meme, you know, like what is it? It was this South Park thing, like, you know, where they're doing prank calls, and it's like the Chinese dude doing the prank call, and it's like, you know, we wanna make scare someone into believing something so that they can sell something. I can't remember what the meme was, and it's like, you know, the dude's like, but we just used this last week. And she's like, all right, do it again. Yeah. And it's like, all right, we're gonna do it again. It's like the same thing again. So I actually didn't hear about this until I just saw the notes. I was like, okay, so didn't they just ban it like 3 weeks ago?
I've started to just
call me stupid, but whatever.
Yeah, they tried.
I've started to just tune out anything about it being banned in China or India, any of that. It makes no difference. It's just like noise now.
It is noise, but I think it's also important for two reasons why I think it's important. So the first thing that's important to understand about them banning it again is the first thing is why. Why would they do that? And that's one. And I think that's important because depending on why, understand that will help you understand what maybe your country might be thinking about doing at some point. The other thing that is important to understand is that when you're looking at bear and bull markets, when markets stop going down on bad news, you're kind of bottomed out, right? And so this is big news again. China bans it, all cryptocurrency ban. This is the final ban. No one can trade it. But yet the market didn't even budge. And so to kind of the both points me you guys made, like the market's kind of numb to it. Like ninth time again, like, oh, big deal.
You know, no one cares, man. No one cares. Yeah, no one cares. Like at this point, it's like, all right, China's good. It's kind of like, Jenna reminds me of, it's like a little toddler, you know, just crying and crying and crying and crying. It's, you know, and then it's like, no one cares anymore. Like, it's all right. Like, it's, you know, we move on. No one cares. Keep crying. And like, people have moved on with their lives. I don't know. I think they've got to come up with a new sort of scare tactic. Maybe they should say China embraces Bitcoin. And then we'll all be like, uh-oh, something's really up. Like, that would scare me. If China turned around and said, we're going to make it our national currency, I'd be selling all my Bitcoin. Like, game over. I'm out of here. Like, that would be a bad sign for me.
Yeah, so definitely the markets are numb to it, and I think that's okay. But the one piece I saw in this news article I wanted to just grab, which was interesting, was they said that, quote, in order to safeguard people's properties, and the most important part, and maintain economic, financial, and social order. And so it's like that piece. So they did it to safeguard people's properties, yeah, whatever, but maintain economic, financial, and social order. And like, and when they say that, basically what they're, it sounds like to me, what they're saying is that by people having the freedom to choose where they want to store their wealth and value or use what they want as money, that is a threat to the financial and social order. I mean, is that what you guys are hearing?
Obviously. I mean, this sort of reminds me of like, you know, what does a prison guard exist for? To maintain, you know, proper order inside the prison so that the prisoners don't run amok. Like, it's the same thing. Like, you know, I mean, that's the first analogy that comes to mind to me. I don't know, Jess, what you think, but Jesus.
Well, I remember there were some theories before about when they make Bitcoin illegal and Bitcoin mining illegal. It was really just the state seizing control of operations. Because you can see there's something online where you can see all the active miners and they all still stay in China. It's not like they necessarily displaced by the, you know, hundreds and thousands. They're all still there. So what does making something illegal to Chinese citizens necessarily mean as far as China's continued participation in Bitcoin? Because I'm sure the government of China still owns all kinds of Bitcoin.
Yeah, like my two cents here is like, from what I understand, jokes aside, like, I mean, I actually didn't realize there was another ban, but the last one was a genuine like crackdown on mining infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. And that was supposed to be the big ban. And we actually saw the ramifications of that because we actually saw the hash rate drop, right? But now, you know, the hash rate's picked up again and it's recovered. I don't think it's recovered the whole way, but like that was like in live action, a major attempt at an attack on the Bitcoin network.
Right.
And the sort of the Bitcoin network, kind of like what complex systems do, it absorbed the attack and then it routed around it, which is exactly what the network was supposed to do. And on a grand scale, you had exahashes worth of like computing power reroute around the world in live action. And the network didn't skip a beat. Like, you know, we saw a bit of a slowdown on blocks, but then it kicked off again and it continued. So that was like the biggest baseball bat that they could take and like whack and nothing happened. So they're like, oh man, Jesus, this thing doesn't stop. So it's like, all right, quick, throw another ban at it. This time let's like, you know, that didn't work. Let's try what we did last year and let's ban the traders again and, you know, the ability to hold it and all this sort of stuff. And like, you know, again, whatever narrative they're going to give, like the prison narrative and the order narrative and the whatever narrative, it's like a crying toddler, like as I said, but it just doesn't do anything. It's you can't beat a complex system by applying like a linear methodology. And that's where, you know, all of these central planners and blah, 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 that we've always sort of been talking about, they just can't like, they can't win.
Well, what it does do though is, well, one thing that's interesting about that comment is it's exactly what Christine Lagarde, who's previously with the IMF and now with the International Monetary Fund, now with the European Central Bank, and she said, quoting her, that innovation is a threat to financial stability.
And
whoa, did she say that? That's hilarious.
Yeah, well, she said that a while ago.
They don't want you having any workarounds and peer-to-peer payment methods and things where we can circumvent without their.
You better not think, Jess. You better not innovate. You better stay in your corner, madam.
And really, it's not a threat to financial stability. It's a threat to their financial monopoly. That's what it is.
Hell yeah. Amen.
And so I just think it's important to understand what they're really saying, because then it gives us insight into what they're really thinking, and then what may potentially be kind of the trigger points for other countries that control their own currencies, like the European Central Bank or like the United States Federal Reserve, where like they really want to take away that safety valve or that release valve, right, where they don't want to allow people to escape.
Well, it's kind of like imagine if you're on the Titanic. So like I actually kind of feel for these guys, because imagine if you're like you're on the Titanic and we're coming back to this.
Let's talk about the Titanic. I want to talk about the lifeboats, because that's an important thing that everybody needs to know. So I want to talk about what we call the lifeboats, and what does that mean? Because we're on a sinking ship like this Titanic. What those safety valves are. I want to talk about why potentially they don't want us to have those. And then I also want to discuss between the three of us, what do we think the United States is going to do about that? Do they want to take away the safety valves? They want to take away the lifeboats that we have as well. So we're going to talk about those couple things. And then I also want to talk about what the we'll call him infamous CEO of Tesla. We're talking about Elon Musk, what he has to say about the government and taking away safety boats and safety valves. He was in an interview this week, and he had some pretty interesting things to say. And I know there's a polarity. Some of us have different views about him, but it was interesting some of the comments that he said. So we're going to talk about those things when we come back. All right, you're back with the Mark Moss Show, where I'm going to bring to you the latest in Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and the decentralized information each and every week. Follow me on Twitter. I'm the number one Mark Moss. At me, ask me your questions, and we'll talk about them next week as well. I'm here with my good friends Alex Fetsky and Jessica Vaughn, and we are talking about China banning Bitcoin again for the eighth or ninth time, and specifically the comment that they made about Bitcoin being a threat to financial stability and order. And if we read between the lines, what they're really saying is that they don't want to allow people to have an outlet, a safety valve. They want everyone to stay on the sinking ship. And before we went to break, I know, Alex, you were talking about that safety boat, that kind of lifeboat analogy. So jump back in on that.
Yeah. So the way I was going to try and frame it was to kind of like feel sorry for the maniacs, which is imagine you're on a sinking ship and you know that like you're sinking and you're starting to panic. What you don't want is everybody to start freaking out and jumping on the lifeboats and going, ah, we're all going to die, and sort of like going overboard and leaving. So of course, like, you know, they're freaking out. Now this is not what a courageous person does. This is what like a captain who would be a loser does. And, you know, he'll be like, you know, we're all going down together. And, you know, wanting to kind of under the guise of, oh, we must maintain orderliness because we can somehow save the ship. And maybe it's naivete. Maybe they don't think they're sinking. Maybe they think if we all just stay on here and if we all just, you know, in solidarity, you know, be together with Big Brother, we won't all die. And maybe they actually think that this thing is, you know, not unraveling. Maybe they think they have a chance to survive. So it's like, don't get on the ship. Don't freak everyone else out.
Well, what happens is it takes away their tools, right? So like they want to control the monetary supply and they want to control the interest rates. But then when the interest rates get so low and the monetary supply gets so high, they're causing inflation, people want to leave. When people leave, they lose their controls because now they can't control people with the money and interest rates because people left. And so, I guess it just sends the ship down even faster. The ship's already going down and it just sends it down even faster, I guess.
Yeah, it's like the only... So what I think what their biggest risk is if they don't sort of use a heavy hand, even the people who help them pull the levers internally will be like, man, screw this. This place is, you know, going to hell. I'm out of here. And then kind of... Because they kind of need internal people to function as well. So I can appreciate the panic from a Christine Lagarde who apparently believes that innovation is going to kill us all, based on her hypothesis, we should be walking around with, like, loincloths.
It's not that it kills us all. Innovation does. It's called creative destruction, right? So new creativity kills the old way, and it's supposed to. And so she is right. Innovation does threaten the financial system because it's supposed to. It creates a new, better way, which kills the old way. I want to jump. Oh, go ahead, Jess.
I'm really grateful that she said that because it makes me feel like we're onto the right thing. Like, okay, if they're concerned that we can opt out of this behavioral modification tool that they're designing, total dependency on fiat currency, then it means that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah. And it means that they see this. When something is so good, it kills the old way because it's that much better. Now, I want to just jump gears a little bit, and then let's look at some of the positivity. Now, if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution. And we're talking about Bitcoin being banned again by China. But that's why China and potentially other governments may want to ban it. But it also creates opportunities. And we talk about this like game theory, where if everybody wants to ban it, but a few countries make it legal, how it can actually work out really good for those countries. And so potentially, maybe this could be a big opportunity for the United States. We have seen where when they shut down the mining a few months ago, a lot of those miners, a good majority of them, moved to the United States, big opportunity. And so then the question becomes, will the U.S. follow in China's footsteps, or will they embrace this opportunity? And I want to talk about something, and I want to get Jess's, we're going to get Jess's opinion on this one first. And this is Elon Musk, and he was interviewed by Kara Swisher.
Oh, God. She can take the opinion.
At the annual invite only code conference. And I'm picking Jessica because I know she doesn't like to speak publicly about Elon Musk. So yeah. I'm going to put it to her. But,
oh, no. Did you date him as well? Oh, good.
But he said, Elon Musk argued that global government should steer clear of trying to regulate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. That's what he argued. And he said, quote, I'm going to read it to you. Quote, it is not possible to, I think, destroy crypto, but it is possible for governments to slow down its advancement, end quote. And then he went on to say, quote, I would say do nothing, end quote. So Jess, what do you think about Elon Musk's take on that right there?
Well, his business plan for Tesla and his own personal wealth, he owns Bitcoin. Tesla owns Bitcoin, and he personally owns Bitcoin. So of course he doesn't want to suggest to government to take an axe to his plan advancing forward with his business and his own personal wealth. Like, why would he want anything different? And I don't think that he spoke over boisterously about it or anything. And I think it's reflective of most people's opinions, especially in the crypto space. I mean, why would you need to suggest to government that they should take a heavy-handed regulating something that you own? You don't want that, of course.
Yeah.
I'm grateful that that was his take. The high regard people hold of him, they'll take that under consideration.
Well, I think as an innovator, he gets it, right? So like he's an innovator, he's inventing, and he realizes that if an inventor had to go to the government to get permission before they created something, it would probably never happen. They say like if the Wright brothers had to get permission to build an airplane, it probably never would have happened. And so I think Elon Musk recognizes that if the government puts this regulation on top of it, it's only going to stifle innovation, which of course is exactly what Christine Lagarde was saying they want to stop. So,
right. I personally hope that Elon Musk is on the side of freedom. I know there's some debate about that as far as him being a polarizing figure, but I think he's with freedom.
Yeah, well, we don't have to debate that so much as we can say that he's apparently, per his quotes here, he's definitely on the side of innovation. And so letting innovation happen, which I think is important. And speaking of innovation, there was another big thing that happened this week that I know both you and I got to participate in, which was pretty cool. And that is the integration. And we're seeing this, and I don't want to understate this. And again, real quick before I tell you about that, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show on the iHeartRadio Network. And I want to talk about some innovation that happened this week with technology integration that is going to make a massive, massive impact. Some people are saying this could push Bitcoin's price above $300,000. But it's not even about that. It's paving the way for an entire new economy
And we're going to talk about that. I want to talk about the pieces of technology that got integrated. Like I said, Jess and I both got invited into this program and we've been using it. I've been using it today. I want to explain that to you. But really, I want to talk about how cool it is, but more importantly, how it changes the economy. And most importantly, this incentive structure of providing value back and forth. We're going to talk about this opportunity as soon as we get back. So hang on. All right, you are back with the Mark Moss Show. This is a brand new show where I talk about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, the decentralized revolution, and what I am calling the biggest opportunity that you'll ever see in your life, we'll ever see in multiple generations. And the best way to take advantage of asymmetric opportunities like this is by having asymmetric information. You have to know things that the majority of people don't know. You have to be an early adopter. And so if you tune in with me each and every week, you're gonna have that information to participate, to take advantage of this. So take a second real quick while you're listening, pull out your phone, put a calendar reminder for this very time on this station. Come back every single week. Also, send me a tweet, one Mark Moss, the number one Mark Moss, at me, ask me a question. I'll make sure to answer on the show next week. All right, so we are talking about, we're switching gears. I'm with my good friends, Jessica Vaughn and Alex Fetsky. And we are talking about a new innovation that just happened this week that I think has massive implications for the way the world moves forward. And so let me explain that what that is. And so Jessica, Alex, myself, we're content creators. You can find us all on Twitter at Jessica Vaughn and at Ghostus Fetsky.
That's it.
at Ghostus Fetsky, at Jessica Vaughn, and of course at One Mark Moss. You can find us there. And what's interesting is this new technology that happened. And so this week, Twitter rolled out some new innovation that has integrated direct Bitcoin payments into the Twitter app. And what it's done, I think they've also kind of partnered up with Substack and OpenNode, but mainly with Twitter and Strike, they've built an application, a way to put Bitcoin payments right into Twitter. And shout out to Jack Mahlers, who's really leading the charge in some of this innovation and has invited me to the beta group. So thank you, Jack. And Jessica, I got that installed today, this morning, and already leading up to this show, I was starting to get tips. People were literally sending me Bitcoin. And
my dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free.
Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have to say, you know, we learn about these things, we talk about them, and we have this viewpoint, but to see it, like when we were all down in El Salvador, to see it, it gives you a different perspective. And so all of a sudden today, I'm getting tips from not anonymous people, but people that follow me on Twitter. Thank you for that. And it made me just think, it shifted my mindset on this a little bit. So think about this for a second, guys. It made me think it's a new way of exchanging value. If I can give value to other people, they can directly pay me back with tips without having any intermediaries, without anybody in the middle, without rent seekers. Now, I got a lot of dollar tips. That was pretty cool. Someone sent me a 5-cent tip. And whatever, 5 cents, that's cool. But there's no way to pay 5 cents normally. And so I just think it's hard for us to imagine right now, but the way this is going to change content creators and this value exchange. What are your thoughts on that, Jess?
Well, I just got done while you were talking, sending you a tip because I wanted to make that my first transaction because you bring me so much value, of course. So I just set it up this morning, which is super exciting. Thank you, Jack Mahlers. So I'm just so excited because I just got to pay you in Bitcoin and use the Lightning Network through Strike, and I didn't have to part with any Bitcoin. And to me, that's the biggest part. But how exciting
wait,
is
wait,
this?
What? Imagine what? You just paid me in Bitcoin without parting in Bitcoin.
No, I put some US dollars from my bank account in there, and I didn't even have to. So somebody can tip me in Bitcoin using this network through Twitter, and they don't have to have Bitcoin. They don't have to have any of that. Nor, you know, because we all want to hodl our Bitcoin, of course. We're not trying to spend it right now. It's also the world's most beautiful asset, so why would we want to spend it? Well, now I don't have to, but I get to use and participate in Bitcoin and support Bitcoin in the network and support you without having to part with my Bitcoin. How crazy cool is that? And I think this is so amazing also because when retail stores understand that they can let consumers who already have these digital wallets to let the consumers use that in their stores, and now they don't have to pay these fees to Visa and MasterCard, that's a huge game changer. How exciting.
Yeah.
You're the checkout with Twitter.
You're listening to the Mark Moss Show, and we're talking about this brand new integration with Twitter and Lightning and Strike, and really the way it changes the relationship of content creators and people that absorb that content. And really, it's the incentive behind the value structure. And so, even this morning, I started thinking to myself, "Shoot, how can I provide even more value?" Like, I literally found myself thinking that, "How can I provide even more value so I get more tips?" What do you think about that, Alex?
Look, man, I've had a dream since I was young to start my OnlyFans page, and now I can do it on Twitter, and I don't even have to do it. Like, I don't even have to build a page. No. It's seriously, this is really cool. What can I say? Unless I get banned on Twitter again, I think this will be a great way to like sort of generate some. It's like a side hustle for the stuff that a lot of people do already. And what makes it really interesting is that, like, for traditional, let me put it this way, 10, 15, 20 years ago, like before the internet really took off and blogs and all that sort of stuff, let's say it's actually even been longer now, 25, 30 years ago, like if you wanted to make money from generating content, you like literally had to work for a newspaper, you had to write a book, you know, had to work for a radio station or a TV station, right? You had to be part of like the production apparatus. And over the last two decades, 2.5 decades, you know, that kind of the opportunities broadened and you were able to become like a blogger and things like that. And that, particularly in the last, I'd say 10 years, like blogging became, you were able to become a content creator, influencer, and use all those sort of things. But you were still sort of bound by getting paid from like via advertising or shilling something and like, you know, selling somebody else's product and, you know, referrals and affiliate systems and stuff like that. There was no direct way to monetize content because it's just uneconomical for people to pay you small amounts of money. So this thing like breaks all of that. And for me, it's like Bitcoin is a communication medium. And I've always said this, like on the more philosophical discussions that we have, it's, you know, Bitcoin is pure, perfect money. And money is like an energy transmission mechanism. It, you know, it's a communication medium. And this kind of takes Bitcoin's, takes Twitter's already broad network and allows us to not only use it to transmit speech and like abuse each other in 160 characters, but it allows us to actually tip each other. And you know, like it's I think it's a big deal, man. Super big deal.
But I think it's even bigger than that, right? So I think it's
well, yeah, it's the start of something so much larger, right?
Exactly. And that's my point. It's the start of something so much larger. And it's kind of like, you know, in my first segment, I was talking about these technological revolutions, how when electricity came out, I mean, electricity, it was like a digital candle. Like, I don't need a digital candle. Candles work fine. Well, we didn't just need an electric candle, but what does electricity allow us today? And so the way this fundamentally shifts, and we always talk about with Bitcoin, how it changes the incentive structure. And so, right, Charlie Munger says, show me the incentives, I show you the outcome. And so it changes this incentive structure to, like I said, even myself this morning, I found myself thinking, how could I provide even more value? Which, of course, I always try and do. But I think that's big. And then the other thing is a lot of people don't know is that recently, I think in the last month or two, PayPal teamed up with the Anti-Defamation League. And per the Anti-Defamation League, they're gonna make a list of everybody that they think shouldn't be able to get payments. And they were gonna provide that list to PayPal, and PayPal was now going to censor all payments to anybody on this list. And even bigger than that, they agreed to share this list with all the other financed payment companies out there. And so, oh, Alex, you talk about this, or oh, WikiLeaks, we can't pay this, or you talk about this, or your country doesn't allow this. And so this is peer-to-peer content creation. And I think it's the start of this of incentive shift, this pay for content, pay for value, a value transfer. And it's so much bigger. So I want to talk about that in just a second. Talk about maybe we can spend a minute forecasting where that can go. Because as I've been saying on the Mark Moss Show on the iHeartRadio Network, that having this asymmetric information is what allows you to have this asymmetric upside, which is, as I've been saying, the biggest opportunity we'll ever see. So we'll be back with that in just a second. All right, you are back listening to The Mark Moss Show. Thanks so much for joining me, where I am going to talk about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, the decentralized revolution, and literally the biggest opportunity that you'll ever see in your lifetime, multiple lifetimes and generations. And the only way that you can have the full opportunity and benefit from this is by having information that the majority, what I might call the herd, doesn't have yet. And so tune in with me each and every week. Set your calendar right now. Mark it for this time, this channel. And come back with me each and every week. I'm with my good friends Jessica Vaughn at Jessica Vaughn on Twitter, and Alex Fetsky is at Ghostos Fetsky. Of course, I am at One Mark Moss. Send us a tweet, ask us a question. We'll try to answer it next week when we come back. But we are in the middle of talking about how I hate to say the biggest, because man, all these shifts are just so massive, and it's hard to imagine where they're going. But this week, we're talking about how Twitter rolled out in conjunction with Strike. The ability to send Bitcoin to people on Twitter, and the way that it changes the incentive structure. And so, like, it's kind of like if we were watching this, like, futuristic, you know, we watch one of these movies in the future and they go back in time. And when they go back in time, they say, don't touch anything, because if you even touch the smallest thing, it could
you know, completely change the future. And so we understand from that, like, this small shift, like, what could that mean in the future? And so we were talking about the ability to, you know, change the incentive structure where now we can provide more value, get paid directly back for the value that we provide from the people who receive the value, as opposed to needing this third-party advertiser in the middle that we may or may not agree with. And even more importantly, it allows us, especially in today's day and age, which is more and more cancel culture, and, you know, we can't have tolerance for people anymore, and PayPal's teaming up with the Anti-Defamation League to block payments to people, and Bitcoin is censorship resistant. I can't be censored. If I want to send money to someone, or someone wants to send money to me, it doesn't matter what PayPal or ADL has to say about it. It's censorship resistant. I know, Alex, you wanted to say something about that.
Yeah, I was going to. So I actually have a thing about the censorship resistance that I want to say. But before I say that, I just want to kind of put my opinion about PayPal. Like, I hate PayPal. I've always hated PayPal. I think it's a really crap product because, I mean, even just let's put aside the financial censorship that they have. It's just a really bad app. Like, I remember I was trying to sell a speaker while I was in Germany that I'd bought, and the dude came. I paid for the speaker. Sorry, I was buying a speaker. That's what I was doing. I bought the speaker off this dude on eBay. He came, he showed it to me, and it was all like broken and smashed. I was like, yeah, well, dude, I don't want this because, you know, I don't want it. So, like, he took it back, and then I had to like fight PayPal to get a refund, but they charged me euros on my Australian dollar card. So they hit me with a conversion, and then on the refund, they hit me with a conversion on the back. So I paid 500 euros for this speaker, which cost me like 700 Australian dollars, and then they gave me back 450 euros. Like, took me 6 months to get my money back, and like this is like the kind of dinosaurs that we're dealing with.
If I may jump in on that, Alex, though, but you know, Bitcoin is immutable, and mm-hmm. so with Bitcoin, you wouldn't have been able to get your money back at all.
With Bitcoin, I would have been able to pay him instantly. So with PayPal, I had to prepay.
No good, but you would have got the speaker that was no good, and then you had no way to get your money back.
No. So I could have paid him when I saw him. The problem with this was, like, I had to check out with eBay. I had to do all that sort of stuff. And, you know, like, and then the conversion fees were actually what killed it. So that's sort of that piece. But anyway, coming back to the censorship resistance. So my thing on that is, yes, Bitcoin is censorship resistant. Like, the risk here is sort of like, you know, Twitter is not censorship resistant, as we all know. So it's these two coming together combined are really important. But this is kind of to your earlier point. It's Bitcoin's integration into communication media is the big idea here. Twitter is like a great way to bootstrap it. But as this starts to seep into everything, what's actually going to happen? And this is actually a piece that I've been arguing for such a long time, is all these people who run around and say we need to build a decentralized social media, decentralized everything, they're wrecked now. Like, you literally do not need to build a decentralized social media. You need to build in decentralized payments into social media, because then what happens is people go and get monetized on social media networks that do the least censoring. Because if you censor all your people off, they go somewhere else, you actually demonetize yourself and people go somewhere else. So at the moment, everything's sort of run by advertisers, and, you know, they can sort of create these walled gardens, et cetera, et cetera. So now, by Bitcoin integrating in all sorts of communication mediums or media, you end up creating incentives for people to add value where they can, right? So it actually creates competition in the space and makes censorship economic suicide.
Something you said there actually just struck me, right? So it was like, right now, the social media platforms are run or really influenced the most by their advertisers.
100%.
But when the advertisers don't matter anymore because the content creators themselves are getting paid, it decentralizes that need. And now the content creators hold the power, but it's a decentralized power instead of having one giant entity doing that. What do you think about that, Jess?
I am so excited for the future. It's a nice dose of hope. And these days, I really need that.
it's cool because we're literally witnessing it happening in real time. And if you don't take the time to think about it, discuss it like we're doing, and really just, I guess, you know, be grateful for it and like really see the power that it could have for the future, and then you don't have the hope, and we all need that hope, right, Jess? I guess what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I want to just add one bit of nuance there, dude, is just what you said about it decentralizes all of this stuff. And the nuance there is it's not one decentralized platform that we need, is we need multiple mediums of communication that compete, which creates a broader global decentralized communication network. So it's not just one place. So that's the thing. It's like, we don't need effectively a decentralized version of Twitter. That's not what we need. We need Twitter to compete with Substack, to compete with Medium, to compete with, you know, whatever other idea that is out there, where, you know, the advertisers have less bite, and where the content creators can monetize themselves directly. Like, and that right there is like, again, it's incentives and competition. That's what equalizes everything. You look at anything in nature, competition equalizes everything. So that's what Bitcoin fixes.
Yeah, on the competition aspect, I can tell you firsthand, I'm over here in Puerto Rico. And this week, we're on my side of the island, the power's been in and out all week, 12 hours at a time. And the poor people, unfortunately, I mean, they don't have any money, and they're 90-degree heat, no air conditioning, their food's spoiling, there's no lights, no nothing. I was able to leave to the other side of the island and get a nice hotel. And I was trying to, you know, explain to people, like, if there was competition, these electricity companies would be, you know, incentivized to provide better service and better prices. And if my power went out, I would leave to the competitors. So they'd make sure the power never went out. But when there is no competition, they can just do whatever they want, and they don't have to care what happens, I guess. There's so much more that we can talk about that, and we certainly will. We're going to come back each and every week here on the Mark Moss Show on the iHeartRadio Network and talk about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, the decentralized revolution, and really the big opportunity, the hope that it provides for the world, the opportunities it has. I'm here with my good friends Jessica Vaughn, at Jessica Vaughn on Twitter, and Alex Svetsky. He's at Ghost of Svetsky on Twitter. Of course, I am one Mark Moss on Twitter. Follow us all. Send us a tweet. Tell us you heard us on the iHeartRadio Network. We'd love to continue this conversation on. I have coming up next Alex Gladstein, who is going to be sitting down with me. And the reason why I chose Alex Gladstein for the very first episode of my iHeart show is because he is leading the forefront on human rights. And I believe that's the most important thing. I don't want to set a foundation of talking about money. I want to talk about changing the world and solving human rights. So I'm going to be back with Alex Gladstein in a minute on the Mark Moss Show on the iHeartRadio Network.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.